You're listening to The Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, Dan Fitzgerald here with you this Monday lunchtime. Today, a Catherine mango grower had 10,000 stickers made up with the words, "Our mango farm is PFAS free," written on them. They were designed to ensure the buying public his fruit is safe to eat.
If we were having problems with people being concerned about the fruit, we were prepared and we had a lot of stickers to state that the fruit is free from PFAS. But there was no backlash really, and we spoke to all our buyers and they suggested that if we put it on there now, it's going to create a concern because people will go, well, what's PFAS, and start looking into it.
More on Catherine's mangoes and concerns about contamination from old firefighting chemicals up in a few minutes. Also, there was some good rain around Central Australia over the weekend, which has made for some pretty happy pastoralists.
Yeah, no, it was very good and very general. Normally it's quite patchy over Henbury, but it was very general, so it was good to see, like, every sort of watering point got decent rain. So
we'll take a whip around a few cattle stations in the Red Centre to see how they fared with the wet weather over the weekend. And we'll also step across the border into the Ord Valley, which is just about wrapping up its mango season, to see how some of the farmers there have fared. It's been a pretty patchy season so far. All that and more coming up on The Country Hour with me, Dan Fitzgerald, before 2 p.m. Well, this mango harvest has produced the best ever yields for one Catherine mango grower. However, concerns about a potential backlash against Catherine mangoes after the Four Corners program on PFAS contamination in the region spread concerns on a national scale, that seriously worried grower Mitchell Curtis. Thankfully, though, he says his fruit is safe to eat and has been selling well this season.
I was pretty annoyed with Four Corners. Right at the start of the Catherine mango season, they do a story like that, which creates a perception that our mangoes are no good. There's a small area that has PFAS and compared to the amount of mango orchards in town. So it's not that there's many orchards that have been infected, but it does create a perception around Australia that anything that comes from our region is no good to eat. So Woolies and rang us at the start, because we have a direct vendor with Woolworths, and asked us to prove that we do not have any contamination. And we directed them to the government website that shows that we're outside of the contaminated area, and they were pretty happy with that. We haven't really had any problem during the season. I know there was an article down south, someone showed me an article with a newspaper that said that Catherine Gold, which is our brand, is selling like hotcakes, but the Tyndall Finest brand's not selling. Well, both of those brands are our brands and they're both selling fine. We also got stickers made up, because I was pretty concerned, that says our farm is PFAS free, but we'd never really actually had to use them because there wasn't any evidence of sales being restricted because of it.
You're going to put some stickers on the front of the boxes. Why did you decide against that?
If we were having problems with people being concerned about the fruit, we were prepared and we had a lot of stickers to state that the fruit is free from PFAS. But there was no backlash really, and we spoke to all our buyers and they suggested that if we put it on there now, it's going to create a concern because people will go, well, what's PFAS, and start looking into it.
How confident are you that your farm is free of PFAS?
They've tested bores along Fox Road and they haven't found any result of any PFAS, so we're extremely confident that our region, or Fox Road region, is absolutely clean from any PFAS. We're above the RAP base and our water flows from our area towards Catherine, so You know, water doesn't run uphill, so we're very safe that there is none here.
Do you see this as an ongoing issue?
Yeah, it's not going to go away. The PFAS has been there for 20-something years, or however long. It's not going to be next year where all of Katherine's clean from PFAS. So as it stays in the media, it's going to be an issue. But thankfully, like, we copped the watermelon virus here 5 months after I took over the property. You know, I really didn't want another one, so thankfully we're outside of the area and there's no evidence of it being here, so I think we're safe.
There's a few mango boxes right next to us now with Tyndall's Finest and a graphic of a fighter jet on them. Will you be using those boxes next year?
Oh, I think those boxes are going to go the way of the dodo. We'll have to change our premium line to something else. We've already discussed that, and I don't think we'll be using Tyndall as a word on our boxes or a jet any longer.
How important is perception to the mango industry, the perception of the quality of Katherine's fruit?
It's more marketing. Perception's everything in marketing. So if we're creating a perception that our fruit's alongside of a raft base that has a problem with PFAS, well then people are in their right mind to be concerned about it because they don't know where we are geographically. So we've just got to get away from that perception and make sure that that we're presenting mangoes that people can continue to enjoy, knowing that they're safe.
You're in the last few days of the mango harvest. How's it been going?
Yeah, it's been going really good. We're really tired. We've had an absolute bumper of a year, well over double what we got last year. So for some reason, we just managed to hold our fruit and just absolutely blitzed it this year. It's been great.
Can you give us an idea of what sort of numbers of trays you've pumped out of the shed here?
By the end of it, I think we'll be around 280,000. Last year we got 126,000, so it's a lot more, which is good.
What does that mean to you, that you've had such a good year?
It gets the bank manager off my back and puts a bit of revenue in the business so that we can keep moving forward and improving the business.
And what do you put that down to, such a good year?
We had a really good flowering Every mango grower has tricks on trying to hold fruit on trees, and for some reason this year we managed to do it. And, you know, hopefully next year we can do the same, but mango trees are pretty tricky.
We're in the packing shed at the moment. How have things gone in here this year with workers?
Oh, we've had a really good run with workers this year. We're right at the end of the season. You always lose a few, like this morning. We're usually running about 54 people, and this morning, being Saturday morning, we got 22 arrived on time, and they've dribbled in over time. But for most of the season, we've been packing 100 pallets a day, and they've just kept slogging and done a great job.
Sounds like some pretty hard work for a few weeks there.
Yeah, it's been pretty massive. But a lot of these backpackers, and we've got a few locals, just really enjoy the fact they get a really good cash injection at mango season. They go from here and holiday, I think. But they work hard while they're here. They look pretty tired.
Will you be glad to see the end of it?
Yeah, we're all very tired. So I think we're looking forward to putting a pig on the spit on about Tuesday, I think, and enjoying a bit of a relaxation for about 4 days, and then we start pruning.
That's Katherine mango grower Mitchell Curtis there, speaking about his mango harvest, which is just about to wrap up. Well, the Northern Territory's chief health officer says there's no evidence to suggest mangoes grown around Katherine have raised levels of PFAS chemicals. It follows concern expressed by a local GP regarding the lack of information available for medical staff and patients. Speaking to Adam Steer on ABC Radio Darwin this morning, Dr. Hugh Heggie said any detectable levels are too low to harm humans long term.
I think you need to be very careful about what we're talking about. There's no evidence that there's raised levels of these chemicals in mangoes. It has been shown to be in some eggs when the water used was from that.
I don't think that's true. They have found PFAS levels in some of those smaller mango farms.
Yes, but we're talking about what the levels are. And this is where it's very important to understand what the levels are. And it's a whole of life, 80 years of living, and having an intake of these that is protective of human health. So we have, not we, but the Defence Department And its other collaborators have been looking at the level in the food and the aquatic life around that area. There is no evidence around the world that consistently shows that there are any adverse health outcomes related.
Yeah, I mean, because this is one of the issues, is that where those tests are being done, how those tests are being done, it's quite inconclusive about what is dangerous and what isn't dangerous. And I guess that's what the patient's going to be asking their GP. So now you know these concerns exist from the GPs, will you be getting in touch with those doctors in Katherine?
Oh, well, I can write to them and send them the fact sheet that's available on the NT government website. If they haven't accessed that already, it's the same information that's contained in the Defence Department and Power and Water websites.
Are you in communication with Defence? Are they giving you up-to-date information?
Yes, we share that information on a regular basis. They attend we have a territory working group from the NPA and also other agencies. We advise the population and the government of the Northern Territory about what this is, including the minister, and also including about blood testing, what the results are showing. But importantly, this site investigation has not been completed, and our government has written to the Commonwealth government several times now asking that the population of Katherine receive the same support and access as they have in other sites around Australia.
Northern Territory's Chief Health Officer, Dr. Hugh Heggie, speaking there to Adam Steer on ABC Radio Darwin this morning.
Is life, will it slipping right through my hand?
This Friday morning, you're invited to Songs of Your Streets with Bernard Fanning. The Powderfinger frontman reveals how Brisbane shaped his family, his love for cricket and his unforgettable music.
I've never played this song like this before.
Join me, Jacinta Parsons, for an intimate chat and performance with Bernard Fanning, part of Oz Music Month. Friday morning from 11 on ABC Radio and streaming live on ABC Listen.
Let's stay with mangoes here for the moment on the Country Hour. It's been a mixed bag for growers as they wrap up production across the Ord Irrigation Scheme in WA. For some smaller growers, it's been the sixth consecutive below-average season. But for one large-scale producer, 2017 has brought a record-breaking crop. Ord River Mango Growers Association President Chris Robinson says while yields were down for many growers, the quality of fruit coming out of the region was high.
This is probably about a week to go. We're only a small producer in the Ord, but we've had a reasonably good season. We've had some incredibly good quality fruit, and it's actually a pleasure to pack nice fruit. And most of this will end up in probably in some of the fruit and veg stores down in Perth. I think because of the fruit so good, it'll end up in some of the gourmet fruit and veg shops.
And how have your yields been this season?
Well, we've just come out of 6 years of really horrible yields and horrible seasons, so this year is probably up a fraction on previous years. It's not an exciting year on yields, but certainly the quality this year has been really good. We've had no bad weather to muck up the season. We had a couple of small showers of rain, but nothing significant to give us any real quality issues, and we've had no storms, and as you can see, the fruit looks a treat. It's good.
And how many trays do you think that you would have packed this season?
We're getting up around the 3,000, so that puts us as a very, very small grower.
And other growers on Packsaddle here in the Ord, how has the season fared for them?
I think a bit up and down. Some people have had really good seasons, far more fruit than we've had. Others have had quite poor seasons, so it's been a bit of a mixed bag. I think generally the quality's been really good for everyone. Most people, I think, are finished or close to finished for the year, which is a bit early. It's been a reasonably short season for us. Now, we traditionally pack for about six to 8 weeks a year, and this year we're down to about 4 or 5 weeks, so we're about 2 or 3 weeks shorter than most years. But I'd like to sort of have some fruit ready for the Christmas market, so that, yeah, that sort of stuff. And we may have one variety that we'll hang on to and keep and send down in about 3 weeks' time, ready for people to have some for Christmas.
Why do you think that there have been a few years of shorter seasons and some lower yields, would it be temperatures and their effect on the fruit?
Yeah, it's almost certainly climatic. If you look at the research that's been done over the years, you can predict what's going to be a good year and what's going to be a bad year. I predicted this year would be a fair bit better than what it is in terms of yields, and we had the potential. And if you look around at some of the growers, they certainly got those yields. And last year's wet season indicated that we should have had a good season this year. Our previous wet seasons have not been so kind to us, which basically indicate that we don't get a good crop.
Yields have been down for some of the smaller growers. I know that some of the larger players, like at Galati's Packing Shed, they've had a fair bit of fruit off the trees. I mean, how does that affect other growers in the region?
I think that Galangal orchard has put out probably more than double the fruit that it's ever put out before. But fortunately, I don't think we're seeing the adverse effects of that amount of fruit on the markets. I don't know any of the details, but I gather a lot of that fruit is going over east, and it's not flooding the Perth market. And equally, I've seen some of the photos of the fruit, and the quality is really, really quite good and quite acceptable. So I think they're doing a good job, and that means that we're not mucking up the market.
What would count as a really great season in terms of the amount of trays coming out of the region?
Historically, some years ago, the Ord was putting out around about 280,000-300,000 trays a year, and we're managing that quite well. Now, we haven't seen those sorts of volumes going out for a number of years now, but yeah, hopefully we'll get back to those sort of levels at some stage. And I think we can, with that sort of volume, we can sort of start doing some export marketing and other sorts of marketing, and not just rely on the Perth market.
What are your hopes for next season? Are you confident after 5 or 6 years of sort of the average seasons? What are your hopes for next year?
Well, let's hope we get another good wet season like last year's wet season, a nice steady wet season, and that should set us up really good for a good crop next year. One thing that has happened is that with the 5 or 6 really bad years, a lot of tree health was really poor. And the last 2 years, the tree health has improved. So a lot of the trees around the valley look far better now than they ever have done. So I think we're set up for getting back to sort of normal yields and normal years again. A good wet season would always help.
Ord River Mango Growers Association President Chris Robinson speaking there to Courtney Fowler from his packing shed in the Ord Valley. It's not just agriculture that's relishing the new trade deal with Peru. Australia's mining and service companies also stand to benefit. Latin America is in the middle of its own resources boom, and with an FTA heavy hitter, Peru is very welcome, as Babs McHugh reports.
Under the free trade agreement with Peru, tariffs will be eliminated on the minerals we export there. It will also make it a more attractive destination for Australian manufactured trucks and other mine site plant. But these days, mining has a laser-like focus on digital technologies. Claire Sykes is from a mining services industry body, Mets Ignited.
Australian mining sector is really a world leader in the innovation of mining technologies. It's a highly sophisticated industry, and automation and robotics, the management of data, is all a high priority and great opportunity for Australian METS.
METS is a catch-all term for the mining, engineering, technology and services sector. It's a lucrative growth area, but it's also highly competitive. Claire Sykes says the FTA will give Australia an edge.
In Peru in particular, the metalliferous markets of base and precious metals, copper and zinc, gold, silver and other minerals. We have strong capabilities across the full mining value chain, from exploration through to development and remediation services. This FTA in particular will provide the ability to compete with other METS markets from South America and Canada.
Australian companies are already exporting goods and technologies to Latin America. Heavyweights like BHP, Orica and Worley Parsons are already operating there. Only recently, METS Ignited signed a notice of intent to collaborate with Chile on mining technologies. And with Peru's economy growing quite strongly, the South Americas are very much the place to be.
A number of Australian METS businesses that already export to the Peruvian market, particularly in expertise around the development and extraction of base and precious metals. But the FTA will provide a number of additional benefits and opportunity, particularly for Australian METs that have already established bases in Santiago in Chile as a launch pad for Australian METs into the full LATAM market.
So the Latin market looking like the growth market?
Absolutely. The LATAM market is probably the fastest growing region for the mining and resources sector globally. Strong exploration activity happening in that market.
Claire Skies, she's the General Manager of International Markets with METS Ignited, ending that report there by Babs McHugh.
When I first heard about women's liberation, I heard the word feminist. I thought it was feminist. I didn't even know the word. Then I heard about radical feminist. Oh, that's nice. I like radical. And then naturally it moved, continued in the feminist, became radical lesbian feminist. So I chucked out the boys. And then there was further to go. So I became a radical lesbian separatist feminist.
Was there any part of you that wanted a conventional life?
The thought of living in one place, in one bed with one person. I hyperventilated the thought of it.
Hear the full podcast on the ABC Listen app or go to abc.net.au/conversations.
Well, with flooding rains coming back to Queensland's Gulf of Carpentaria, mud crab catches are on the up. While the last wet season in the Gulf Country wasn't huge, it was an improvement on the past couple of years. It follows similar reports from crabbers here in the Territory who've had catches bounce back after a tough season in 2016. Corumba mud crab fisherman Mark Grunsky says another average wet season would make a huge difference to the fishery.
We've had a couple of poor years of late, weather conditions, that is. We've had very little rain the last 5 years. This year we actually got a small wet in our wet season. It was fantastic, and it has improved our catches. Not to where we would like them to be, and probably not to a normal catch rate, but they are certainly improved this year, and it's been fantastic, yeah.
If you had another wet season like we did last year, how do you think that would impact your catches?
Yeah, it would impact it. It would improve it. Last year was a mild wet season, but we'll take another mild wet season rather than none at all. But if we get one a little bit bigger, that'd be fantastic. But it will increase catches on our mud crabs, on all our fish species and all fishing up here in our Queensland Gulf, yeah.
What do most people around here do to market their mud crabs? Where do they sell them to?
Well, the fishermen here, we sell them to all sorts of markets. We've got our Melbourne markets, we've got our Sydney markets, of course. Some of our fishermen here would have their own buyers that buy directly off them as well. There is a variety of markets available. But with our website, our Mud Crabs Direct, what we've done is we're trying to put it out there to the average Australian be able to buy fresh mud crabs because they are difficult to get. Mostly through the year, yeah.
How's the price of mud crabs at the moment?
Well, mud crab prices vary through the year a little bit. With our Mud Crabs Direct, we send out a minimum of 4 kilos, which is not, it's like 4 mud crabs roughly. So online is $39 a kilo. The prices in our southern markets, Sydney markets particularly, have reached over $70 in recent weeks. And this time of the year, the demand on crab is high, but also general catch rates are down lower because of the time of the year all over, not just here in the Gulf, but on the East Coast as well. So demand is great, which means our price goes up, so which is wonderful.
Mark Grunsky, he's a mud crab fisherman working in the Gulf of Carpentaria, speaking there with our reporter Eric Barker.
Hi, I'm Liz Bird from Indiana Station. I listen to the Country Hour every day while I'm chowing down my steak and salad. Keep it rural.
Still to come in the next 20 minutes on the Country Hour, we speak with one of Australia's largest landholders. And it's probably not an organisation you'd expect to be in that category. It's a conservation group, which is trying to expand its cooperation with farmers. We'll also check in to see where the rain fell on Central Australian cattle stations over the weekend and see what that means for them. But first, let's go to the Weather Bureau with Hatem Abraham. G'day there, Hatem.
Good day, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Let's start in the centre. How are things there today?
So we are expecting more shower and storms to develop during this afternoon. There's some storms and showery conditions just south of the Barkley current, expected to continue during this afternoon and evening as well.
And is and how about the top end? Is there any more rain expected?
Over Darwin, we're expecting maybe possible shower, a slight chance, but even in the central north part, there's current storm showers there. So from 9 a.m. to up till now, in Nhulunbuy, we got around 23 or 32 millimeters. In Alangula, we got 19 millimeters, and the other shower storms, there's no rain gauge around to catch those. Even in Catherine, there's some some north and west of Catherine, some showery conditions there.
And what's the forecast for rain over the next few days?
So over the top end, then not much change. We're expecting a similar scenario with showery and stormy conditions continue. The most likely times will be in the afternoon and during the night with the Gulf lines pushing for, through the top end. In the central and southern part, for a couple of days, we still have this deep moisture that's over the area, so shower storm still there with medium to high chance. And yeah, from Friday or late Friday, we start to see some clearance in the southern part and central part. Yeah, but yeah, from Saturday, another trough will push through and bringing more showery in the central, especially in the western part of the territory.
Good thing to look forward to. How are things looking offshore at the moment?
It's 10 to 15 knots across most of the coastal water, apart from just reaching to 20s in the northeast coastal water offshore.
All right. Thanks for the update, Haddam.
Thank
you.
Have a good day. Thank you.
That's Haddam Abraham. He's at the Weather Bureau.
You're listening to the Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
Staying with the weather now, it was a wet weekend across much of the territory. Reports from Central Australia indicate the rainfall was fairly widespread, but nothing above the 25 millimetre mark. Nothing much above that mark. But for the Rocky Hill Table Grape Farm, it was a different story. Richie Hayes says they had 44 millimetres on Saturday with a very small drizzle last night as well. He says it's the first decent rain he's had all year.
It's beautiful. For the vines at the moment, their fruit's all growing away merrily, so with a bit of rain up their belly, it'll really push them along. It's awesome.
I was just going to ask you, what does that mean for the farm this time of year, you know, heading into a harvest over the next couple of months?
Yeah, the rain like that, that's good rain. When you get a rain when the sugar's in the berries, that's when I have a bit of trouble, but if you could rain any amount at once at the moment, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and to have that, you know, 44 after a year of not having much is pretty good as well. Are you expecting any more today?
I think that there is forecast for more today. I'm just going to jump on the ground and get my road fixed up.
What did the rain do to the roads?
The road, I haven't been able to touch the road all year because it's been so dry. If I touch it with the grader, it'll powder up. But with a little bit of moisture, I might be able to get away with a little light grade.
So be out there this morning getting all that done?
Just about to go.
And how's it all looking there, you know, heading into harvest at the moment? How's the year looking?
Pretty good season. Looking like it's going to be a good season. Not a massive crop, but just a good solid crop. So hopefully we're going to, and the fruit looks beautiful at the moment. So let's hope we can get away with it this year.
Last year, I think the harvest was a little bit late. Are you looking to be on time?
Yeah, a lot earlier this year. Way earlier this year. Last year was really late. So that was a strange year last year. But this time at the moment, I should be pretty much back on track.
Would you welcome any more rain, or you've had your fill?
Yeah, no, any more now would be beautiful. Then they can rack off after that.
Richie Hayes from Rocky Hill Table Grapes speaking there to Katrina Bevan. Further south at Henbury Station, manager Ashley Anderson says they had 17 millimetres over the last few days, and it looks like more could be on the way.
Over the full weekend, we got about 7.5 mil, and then yesterday, Sunday afternoon, in a heavy little storm, we got 12 mil, so it was quite good.
When was the last time you had a good bit of rainfall down there?
Well, we sort of were kind of a bit lucky. We had about 2 weeks ago, over about a five-day period, we got 50 mil, so that was quite good. And before that, we hadn't actually had any rain since January, so it was getting quite dry. But the rain we had a fortnight ago, and then this on top, everything's got a green tinge, so it's quite good.
That's pretty impressive, 50 mil.
Yeah, no, it was very good and very general. Normally it's quite patchy over Henbury, but it was very general, so it was good to see like every sort of watering point got decent rain. So.
What does that mean for mustering? Have you guys finished second round? Are you still going?
We've finished our mustering, but after that lot of rain within the next week, you see little baby calves dropping everywhere, so it was a good sign. I think the cows are just waiting for something to... a bit of green on the ground. So.
You touched on it there, but what's the property looking like now?
It was quite dry, but we still had a bit of dry feed. So with this rain, it's all the buffalo grass has shot green again, and with this rain yesterday, it'll keep it going for another few weeks. So,
what's the sky looking like there at the moment, Ashley?
It's blue sky with a bit of cloud, but it's got quite muggy in the last 2 hours, and it's sort of there's a bit of cloud building up to the west, so it still looks promising.
With the 50 last week and then the 17 over the weekend, there is a bit of forecast for rain about the centre over the next few days. I'm assuming you'd always welcome more?
Yeah, especially we've been quite lucky this month because normally we get a good storm and then we get 5 or 6 days of really hot, windy weather and it just burns it off. But this time we've had a few warm days, but we haven't had that hot, dry wind. And in between we've had a few cool days, so it's been good growing weather. So a month ago it didn't look very promising, but at the moment it looks quite good. So.
Ashley Anderson from Henbury Station speaking there. And as I said, the rainfall didn't reach above the 20 to 25 millimetre mark in most parts of central Australia over the weekend. But in the Barkly, they had some of their first rains of the season. Brunette Downs had around 46 millimetres, while Hollow Station had 27 millimetres. At Enterley Lagoon, there was 20 mils and 19 at Eucharonage. There was also some pretty impressive falls throughout parts of the Top End as well. 121 millimetres at Lonesome Dove Station to the east of Mataranka in the Roper Valley. Looks like there might be some more rain over the next few days as well. Well, one of Australia's largest landowners and land managers says it wants to form more partnerships with farmers across Australia. Bush Heritage Australia now owns or manages 7 million hectares of land across the nation as part of its conservation projects. CEO of Bush Heritage, Jared O'Neill, told Tony Briscoe farmers want to learn more and more about improving their properties and farming practices.
I've been inspired, I suppose, by people who understand and get that and feel that connection to land and that stewardship, that desire to see it in good shape, look after it and make sure it's around for not only my time but my grandchildren's time, those future generations to come after us. And that I think that's something we share in common with many people. So it doesn't stop in someone like myself who's worked in conservation land management for over 35 years, but farming communities, people in towns and cities who I think even people who like to pot around in the garden have that connection to land and the growing of things and seeing things flourish and thrive.
What was the journey like for a young bloke from Canberra University to the middle of Kakadu?
I still remember stepping off the plane, came out of a frosty Canberra morning and then opened the door. And what I've never forgotten is the smell of a bit of smoke in the air and frangipani, as I strolled across, which was a bit like Hobart, still no air bridges up there in those days, and across the hot tarmac. And I've been going back to the north practically and metaphysically ever since. It shaped my view of the world, and and some of the experiences I had there have really formed my my appreciation of what we do today. So it was a great, it was the best thing I've ever done in my life, obviously.
Still a special place to go back to when you get the chance.
Absolutely. And look, I was in the top end further west just the other day, and Bush Heritage works in the Kimberley with Aboriginal people, Warrnambool Gumbra, and we've been working there on working with them on their land management, their culturally driven land management. And to step into that warm, soft air early in the morning and hear that first bird call, which is often in that part of the world, a pied butcher bird, which is just one of the most beautiful harmonic calls you'll ever hear. And then think about the sort of challenges and opportunities, but that soft, warm air, and then as the day comes up, birdsong comes up, and then a bit of heat comes into it, and so on. But it was it's a beautiful landscape, and it's one that Australia is, it's remarkable in that we've got these large, intact landscapes that support communities, support enterprise, but also support this wonderful environment we have.
Tell us about Bush Heritage and why you came to embrace this organisation. What are your thoughts on this organisation and what it does?
Oh, look, it's astonishing what's occurred with Bush Heritage, because really a small group of people, and after all that's ever taken to get something interesting going, really started out as an idea and a bold move to acquire a small block of land here in Tasmania. And I was aware of that campaign in my other life and working in government in different parts of Australia, but I was aware of this cheeky organisation that said, you may be concerned, but here's an opportunity to do something practical. We buy land, we own it, and through that we then concentrate on the long-term stewardship of that land. And I was aware of that, and I guess I had the opportunity when the role became vacant nearly 7 years ago now to come and immerse myself in that. And for me it was a regenerative opportunity. It was a chance to reconnect after operating at a policy and a public interface level where you're a bit disconnected from people who are passionate.
So you're able to get back to the bush.
Well, back to the bush and back to people who really, I'm just amazed how people support this organisation, and right across Australia it's growing. People say, I want to do something. And through that, I've connected with people. I work with a great team of people, and I'm back to the bush. I'm back to those places where you can walk out and smell the flowers and breathe the fresh air and hear and see wildlife going about its business, and think, well, this is a great space to be in and work with a passionate team of not only staff members but supporters right around the country who say, yeah, we really like what you're doing. Keep going.
Small beginnings, as you say, in Tasmania from Liffey, and now a very big landowner across the country.
Yeah, well, our supporters and through the organisation have meant that we own somewhere around about 1.2 million hectares of land in our own right, and we work across another 6.5 million hectares of other landholders who we partner with to help them achieve those mutual goals of sustainability across the land.
What sort of partnerships or work do you do with the agricultural community?
Look, it's a really good call. In different parts of Australia, I'll talk about two particular areas. So in the west of Australia, at a town called Perenjori, we own a reserve called the Charles Darwin Reserve. And we were operating inside the boundary there for a little while. And then we said, no, there's got to be a better way and a bigger way we can have a conversation. So we work with the neighbours, we work with mining companies, we work with pastoralists, and we've had a conversation about what sustainability looks like. And so we've together formed an association to work across 2 million hectares. We focus on funding not only the work we do in our reserve, but through the association, sustainability around agricultural productivity, soil fertility, windbreaks on farms. We talk about young leadership, kids at school. We talk about the sort of things that communities are really interested in at that scale. And that's a really great collaboration, and some of our greatest supporters are the pastoralists in that area. But in Tasmania, I think, and this is where the really smart and innovative thing that's happening here, in the mid-landscapes from sort of Longford down to almost to Pontville, we've been working with farmers now for 10 years to think about smart ways to help them continue to steward the land that they've had sometimes in the family for generations. They've been looking after it, and it contains some of the rarest grassland communities in the world. So in conservation terms, they've shrunk to a tiny set of remnants, mostly which is on private land. And the pastoralists here in Tassie, the graziers, have really said, well, How can we work with you? We're very keen to not be bound by regulation here, but out of that, the flexibility that Bush Heritage and the Tasmanian Land Conservancy, and for that matter Greening Australia, have brought to the table, have allowed farmers to continue to farm land, to work with us under contract agreements for works to be done against benchmarks on their land to produce agreed outcomes for conservation on their properties. And that work fits in the farming cycle. Most of these areas are still available for grazing, lightly so, particularly good winter paddocks and so on. And from that, there's a dividend on the balance sheet from conservation effectively to those families who are, let's face it, have been stewarding that land for a very long time anyway. Mm.
Is there a perception that land under conservation is also conserving the species you don't want, the feral animals? Is there that perception? Does that happen?
It's always the case that there's the risk that people think that you've locked an area up and walked away. What we put a high premium on is having our reserve managers on country, having a mailbox on the mail run, having kids in the school, and being part of the community, so that that perception doesn't exist, and they know if they need to talk to us about an issue, if there's a, and by the way, you know, pigs don't know which side of the fence they're on. they're pretty smart pigs, but they'll cross boundaries whichever direction, and
or cane toads,
or for that matter, you know, feral camels, or the whole gamut of yeah. groups out there. So you know, I used to have a joke about you could always tell. The conservation rabbit because he had a white tail. At least that's what people thought, you know. They don't all come from those properties. And so it's important that everyone just gets together and works on a landscape scale. And that's one of the things that we sort of approach this from, that, you know, no property is an island. And at the landscape, there's a whole lot of factors that shape. And increasingly these days, the issues are at much larger scale than the individual property level. And if people understand that and work together at that scale, then I think you'll get a better outcome across all those issues. But look, weed control is a fundamental thing. Fire control, fire management, pest animal control, and good fences. If you get those things broadly right in a landscape, people let you get on and do your business.
Plans for the future.
It's always, we would like to add over time more land to our estate as it becomes available. I'm really excited about the partnership opportunities, and I think once again the Tasmanian Midlands example here shows what can be achieved when you're clever and when you work well with people who have got a long eye on the future. And out of that, we'll expand our partnership work, and particularly with Aboriginal people in Northern Australia. There's a lot of opportunity to work in that space. It's very good value, and Aboriginal people are remarkable long-term thinkers about their land. They've got an ethic and a cultural view of looking after country, which really works well with our goals and our values. And so acquire more land, work with our neighbours, and support Aboriginal people in their long-term aspirations for country.
That's CEO of Bush Heritage Australia, Gerard O'Neill, talking there to Tony Briscoe about plans to form more partnerships with his organisation and farmers across the country. Gerard O'Neill was a keynote speaker at the National Private Land Conservation Conference held in Hobart recently. Time now to take a look at the markets. Let's go to the Dublin cattle sale in South Australia. Here's John Traeger.
Numbers came back dramatically as agents offered 258 head. And while one X-day process from the usual field was absent, restockers and feeders were once again well represented. Quality was generally fair to good throughout the offering, with some extremely well-presented supplementary fed milk teat steers coming forward. Veal steers improved in quality, with light steer veal selling from 250 to 312 cents in firm, while the heavier calf listed by 10 to 12 cents to sell from 270 to a top of 355 cents a kilo. Light and medium weight yielding steers also sold the firm trend, with rates ranging from 250 to 302, with heavier supplementary types up by 12 cents a kilo and ranging from 280 to 284 cents a kilo. Yielding heifers were of mixed quality and overall maintained the previous sales rates, with lightweight selling from 220 to 270 cents, while heavyweights traded from 250 to 296 cents a kilo. Grain steers were also of mixed quality and were backed by from 5 to 15 cents a kilo, with lighter types ranging from 238 to 280 cents, with a small number of heavyweights ranging from 260 to 286 cents a kilo. Life cows traded from 180 to 220 cents and easy to buy from 6 to 8 cents a kilo, with heavy cows ranging from 215 to 228 cents and generally firm on the last sale. Light bulls to restockers traded from 148 to 260 cents, with heavy bulls to the trade selling from 170 to a top of 242 cents a kilo. This is John Traeger for MLA's National Livestock Reporting Service and the Country Hour.
Thanks for that, John. And that's about all we have time for on the Country Hour today. If you missed our top story today, we spoke with a Catherine mango grower who ordered 10,000 stickers saying his Catherine mangoes are free of PFAS. His farm is outside the investigation area and he had some pretty serious concerns about the perception of Catherine mangoes for potential contamination with PFAS chemicals, which have been found coming out of the RAF base near Tyndall. You can catch up on that story on the podcast if you just jump on your computer or your phone and search for the Northern Territory Country Hour. You can also find all our stories on Facebook, or we're also on Twitter if you search for Northern Territory Country Hour. Coming up after the 2 o'clock news is Lorella. What's on the show today?
You know, frogs, they're very noisy, right?
Yes, they are.
They're super noisy in my backyard at the moment, and for some strange reason, despite the fact that the populations are large here in the Territory, they're on the decline. Going to talk about frog species this hour.
There we go. I was only chatting with my housemates last night when some frogs started out our window, and he always likes to imagine that they're ducks and not cane toads. Sadly, I don't think they were ducks. They were cane toads. But chatting frogs on Lorella's program up after the news. That's the Country Hour for today. My name's Dan Fitzgerald. Take it easy.